Well, today we're starting a new study in the next 13 weeks about Jeremiah. And it's interesting to always remember, what's the book of Jeremiah about? It's about God. Sometimes we get so focused on the individuals and we get so focused on David or Paul or different people in the Bible, and we get fascinated with their life. But what is the purpose of it? It's to reveal and understand the nature and God. And Jeremiah is an interesting study. What comes to mind other than Jeremiah was a bullfrog? For all of you, when you think... For all of you, what comes to mind when you think of Jeremiah? A what?
Building the walls of
Jerusalem. Building the walls, okay. What about the rest of you? What comes to mind when you think Jeremiah?
Is he the one that's called the Weeping Prophet?
The Weeping Prophet, that's what he's been called.
Wasn't he the one that was cut in half?
Was he cut in half? I don't know. I don't think he was. I don't know.
I've heard the text often. I didn't realize it was Jeremiah before I formed you in the womb. Jeremiah 1:5.
You what?
He
was a writing prophet. He. You know, what's interesting to really look at when you think about Jeremiah is he's been a bearer of bad news. Any of you like to be a bearer of bad news to people? You know, as a therapist, people come to me and they want me to give them an answer. And occasionally I'll say to them, I'm not sure what there is to work on here. You know, if it's a marriage situation. I said, it appears like there's always already been a decision. And usually one will say, no, but I really want this. I say, well, I know. But you always have to remember, it's what both have to want this. So anyway, as a bearer of bad news, Jeremiah had quite a task ahead of him. And he was also very reluctant. You know, something about Jonah, Moses, Jeremiah is comforting to me. What's comforting to me is it's kind of nice to realize, even though I'm not the one up there trying, I'll do it. They still have purpose. And they still had a great message in God's plan. Because, you know, you look at Moses. He not wanted nothing to do with go back to Egypt. He wanted nothing to do with going back to that place. And we look into Jeremiah. He was in the same kind of persuasion. Look in Jeremiah 1. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests who were the Anatotes in the land of Benjamin. So we already get a picture of him. He comes from a family of priests. He was a preacher's kid. Anybody in here been preacher's kids? Far from it, huh? Well, you always heard the stories about preacher kids and how they were the worst kids and stuff. Well, that's not true from Jeremiah, what I've read about his family. Growing up, he talks about pretty happy experiences growing up in this family. Ellen White talks about that. In her speaking about Jeremiah. Find my page here. Among those who had hoped for a permanent spiritual revival as a result of Reformation under Josiah was Jeremiah, called to the prophetic office while still a youth in the 13th year of Josiah's reign. A member of the Levitical priesthood, Jeremiah had been trained from childhood for holy service. In those happy years of preparation, he little realized that he had been ordained from birth to be a prophet unto the nations. And when the divine call came, he was overwhelmed with a sense of unworthiness. You know, that's always an interesting dynamic about when you're called at times lot of individuals in the Bible were called, and they always had a sense of, oh, I'm not worthy. What's the thing when God presented to Saul? He fell down. But the beauty of all of those stories is, stand up. Come up, rise. I want to be your friend. So Jeremiah was that prophet who had been trained for years. And here he was in this experience. So we read about his family. To whom the words of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, the king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, until the end of the 11th year of Zebadiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, until the exile of Jerusalem in the 5th month. Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, and this is the text that Eloise read, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I've appointed you a prophet to the nations. Tell me what your thoughts are when you hear those words. Before you were formed in the womb, I knew you. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
God is all-knowing.
God is all-knowing. Okay. So with that God all-knowing, what does that do for you then in life? Okay, a peace. Okay, that's a wonderful thing, a sense of peace. How about the rest of you? What do the rest of you think?
I guess I
personally.
Personally?
Uh-huh.
And I think about it even with my family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you think about it personally. What do you think about personally? What does that mean?
Well, it means
before you.
He knew 87 years ahead where I'd be. Mm-hmm. He knew all about me.
Okay. Go ahead. You hit your hand up.
Yeah, as a mathematician physicist, what it tells me is that God's not confined by time. We have to think about knowledge as that we have to wait 10 years in order for us to figure something out. Mm-hmm. But for God, He's not confined by waiting for those 10 years. He knew what was then, He knew what's now, and He knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that's not confined by time restraints.
Okay, so he's not confined by time restraints. Does this, any of this, go ahead.
So what are beautiful things being known by another person?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is incredibly special to be able to know my God.
Absolutely. To be known by God even before you were formed, it says. God has a plan. A purpose, okay? There's the whole book written, A Purpose-Driven Life, based on this text. Does any of it stimulate conflict? Or, okay, God has already laid out, and I'm just going to do like I'm predestined? Does that come into any of your minds?
I can see where some people pick that up,
mm-hmm.
but that's not the case.
Okay. Go ahead.
He didn't say, though, he just says, I knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a knowledge of who you are and what will happen in your life, mm-hmm. and what, you know, the choices that you will make, you know, and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Does God really know the choices we're going to make?
I don't know. What do you think?
Because He knows the choices. That's what trips my trigger.
Okay.
If He knows the choices, then do we really have free choice?
Uh-huh.
We could have free choice, and He could know every single combination of choices we possibly could make.
He's speaking as a mathematician there. He's talking about, you hear combinations. It's all the different permutations and combinations.
He knows our makeup. He knows our gene structure, shall we say, and the things, the multiple choices, the things that we're going to be faced with because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a, I still think it's my choice as to what's going to take place.
Yeah.
Why did God ask Judas to be a disciple if he knew that Judas was going to turn against him?
It's the same thing about why did he create Adam and Eve when he knew they were going to that. Go ahead.
Rick. Because we, just because God knows doesn't not make it a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Roger as a counselor can probably counsel with somebody and pretty much understand what's going to happen in their life. But that doesn't necessarily change what's going to happen. You, just because he has knowledge, and God, with all his universal supremacy and perfection, knows this, but it doesn't remove the choice.
Doesn't remove the choice. But that is oftentimes a big controversy in this area, you know, and it's interesting to look at what does it mean to really know. I like what Brendel said as far as it's nice to be known by somebody. And when you're really known by somebody, they have a sense of really understanding. And, you know, you probably can really start understanding and maybe predicting things. Go ahead.
Well, I have a problem here. It says that God put us together in our mother's womb, you know, him. And how it's happening with people born crippled or without arm, or and all their life they suffer and pain. And he knew that they were going to suffer and pain, and he still created him in the mother's womb. I don't understand that at all. Uh-huh. I'm thinking about that before also. There's one word in the Old Testament says that he's the one who knows everything about us. That we're going to be crippled or not. He knows everything. Still, we still come in this world where we let us go born in this world, you know, crippled and painful and everything. He's the one who's doing that in mother's womb.
You know, it's always an interesting thing when we talk about God and attribute Him to certain things, because as the creator of this universe, He's created all the possibilities. But yet, once I go back to the fact that He's created possibilities, but nothing of the destructive, deformed nature is what He created as what He desires. But He knew the possibilities of creating that. He knew the possibility of creating those. And that's always, you know, when we have the tragedies, the shootings, the this, the that occurring, it goes back to, I think that's where, as Seventh-day Adventist Christian, I'm so grateful, because I really believe having an understanding of what the drama that we're seeing is so important. It's about allowing us the freedom to choose to worship Him and to know Him, or to choose to be against Him or not to know Him. And the consequences of not knowing Him are very simple. Destructivity. Things occur. And I think that always is something we have to keep as a background of understanding, because sometimes we get caught in those moments of, why is this happening to me, or why is this happening to our country, or why is this happening to our world, or what happens at what, you know. And you know what? This is a challenge that Jesus came to confront when He came to the Jewish people. Because what was their belief? This Dr. McCoy over here has this nice big house and all these fancy cars he's doing. He's been blessed by God. He must be a great example of what it means to be a good Christian. Christian and good Jewish person. Now, you know, we can look at so-and-so over here who doesn't have this, who doesn't have that, who has leprosy. Oh, they've been cursed by God. And what did Jesus do? He broke down every one of those beliefs. So here, it's important to keep that background, that knowledge of what this whole theatrical experience that's being played out here over the last 6,000 years, what that's about. You had your hand up earlier.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of people gain strength from seeing what other people are going through.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's where God might be using people, because you see these things on the news where people have cancer, people are going through things, and other people are saying, oh, I'm so much stronger from watching this person.
Yeah, I was watching something on ESPN about this man who had a heart transplant, and he's a soccer player, and he needed a heart, and a 17-year-old died, collapsed playing soccer, and he got that guy's heart, and he's the only player who's received a transplant, heart transplant. He went back and played professionally, and he met and they showed this man who has the heart meeting the father of that boy. And he said very simply that he gave me everything, talking about that man. Because that father decided to make that decision. He gave me everything. And it struck me at that moment, that's what Jesus has done for each one of us. He gave us everything. So when we think, you know, that's just that dramatic. And this man talked about, he says, I live my life totally different now because he gave me a new heart, pointed toward the man. So we look at Jeremiah and we look at his life and hear that text. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I've appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, Alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth. Where have we heard that? Go back to Exodus. Moses, what did he say? I'm not a good speaker. You got the wrong person, God. Have you ever felt that way? Got the wrong person? I must have pulled my thing out here. What did Moses say? He said, in Exodus chapter 4, and Moses said, Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since. Thou hast spoken to thy servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. So here Jeremiah is saying, well, I'm a youth. I don't know how to say this. What did God say to Moses? And the Lord said to him, Who has made man's mouth? How'd you like to answer that question? Who made your mouth? Or who makes him dumb or deaf or seeing or blind? It is I, the Lord. Now, once again, you can see how the Jewish people took those texts and decided, okay, God is doing this to me. God is not doing this to me. God is doing this. But you got to understand the context. The context to Moses is he's saying, what are you telling me this for? I'm the Creator, and you're saying you don't know how to speak? But he said, Please, Lord, now send a message by whomever thou wilt. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses, and he said, Is there not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently, and moreover, behold, he is coming out to meet you when he sees you. He will be glad in his heart. If nothing else, you look at that little story of Moses there, and it's God will accept our limitations and provide a way. He didn't strike Moses down and say, well, he said, okay, here's a plan. You know, as a teacher, sometimes, don't you have the experience when a kid says, well, I can't do this, it's too hard, blah, 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 and you just want to, okay, kid, come on. Get with it. You know you can do it. I think God must feel that way so many times. I know He's felt that way probably a lot with me in life. Oh, what are you thinking here? But the beauty is God continues to work. Jeremiah, going back to Jeremiah, says, "Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord," declares Yahweh. I am with you. Do you know how many times there is in the Bible, "Do not be afraid"? That's one of the most common things that's in the whole Bible. Do not be afraid. Fear can grip us. Fear can shut us down. Fear puts us, as I tell all these little kids I see, in your lizard brain. It shuts you down. You don't think. Had a funny experience yesterday. I was with this little 5-year-old boy who's been told not to come back to school because he pees on himself and he's just going all kind of destruction in school. So, you know, I was meeting him in the playroom and he said to me, "Do you have any children?" I said, "Yeah, I have 2 daughters. He said, "Do they go to school?" I kind of laughed. I said, "Well, no, they're adults. They're done with school."
Finally.
Finally, yeah. Both of them, yeah. Finally, they're done, you know. So anyway, he said, "I wish I was done with school." And I just started laughing because here he's at 5. I thought, "Well, you've got a long way to go, boy. You just started." But he said it in such a beautiful, simple way. "I wish I was done with school." And I thought, man, he's an intelligent little guy. I was impressed with his ability to stay that. "I wish I was done with school." I was impressed the way he got back to say, "Tell me what he wanted to be done with." That was impressive. Because he went through me to get out his point. He wanted me, if I had children. Then it's, "Do they go to school?" And then it's, "I wish I didn't. I was done with school." So I'm sure God has worked with these individuals, Moses, with Jeremiah. And that is the encouraging thing with me, is he can work with me. "Then the Lord stretched out his hand and touched my mouth. And the Lord said to me, 'Behold, I have put my words in your mouth.'" Wow, what a statement. What is the thing, like, Yahweh, touch your mouth? What is that, the sense? And don't you sometimes have the experience where you're talking to someone and later you say, "Where did I come up with that? Where'd that come from?" And I think sometimes there's a sense of, wow, I think that really had impact. If someone will come back to you and say, "Boy, you said something that really kind of startled me." You know, you wonder where. I wonder what that was like for Jeremiah. Go ahead.
You know, I think of the text that many are called, but few are chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that God chooses certain people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of us. But I feel very much like God chose to have me be one of his children.
Uh-huh.
He selected me.
Uh-huh.
And there has been many times through the trials of my life that I could have walked away.
Uh-huh.
He would not let me.
Uh-huh.
It was as if God hung on to me, and it's like, "You're not going. You may be wandering. You may be, you know, off the track, but you're not leaving."
Uh-huh.
And I feel so thankful. You know, here at my age, I can look back and see where I made the mistakes and how horrific they were in my life. But yet, God stood by me. He continued with me. And he continued to draw me close.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, I praise his name because of that. I love him because he would not turn loose of me.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, you know, I look at Paul's life and Jeremiah, those that were chosen from birth are chosen at a point in time.
I mean, I've been in the church all my life, but I'm so close to not being.
Right.
And so I do believe that he chooses certain people, and he hangs on to us and protecting them. And that, to me, should be such an encouraging thing to a Christian. And, you know, we may have part of our family that may be missing, but there will be some of our family because of our strength and that we hung on. That will be there too.
Absolutely. And you know what? You can see how that worked in the life of Jesus. Who did he work the hardest with? Who did he work the most with? Judas. Peter. The Pharisees. He worked hard, but they continued to say no. You said he chose you. When you would say no, he'd say, no, I still got you. And you'd say, oh, okay. But then you'd say, well, I'm not sure. But then you'd say, okay. And to me, that's the beauty of understanding God's love. He is choosing and wanting everyone to be with him. And to me, that's the reason we're still in this whole drama. We're still in this whole thing is because he's really making sure everyone has that opportunity to say, no, 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 no. You know? And that's such a beautiful thing to look at is how God continues to work and to hang on to and to reach out. You know the tragedy of this book of Jeremiah is that through Judah, there could have been a great witness to Nebuchadnezzar. Because here, I'm getting ahead of myself and several lessons further, but Nebuchadnezzar was having people work on the inside with him. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was seeing God and he was coming back to this Judah and the king that he put in place. And things weren't happening as good with them as it was where the people were working inside. So it's interesting to think about how God has worked. And it's interesting to think about. You know, we all talk about the children of Israel leaving Moses. God was working with Pharaoh as much as he worked with the children of Israel and Moses. And really, when you look at the book of Jeremiah, it's kind of a sad conclusion of the understanding of these children of Israel and how they were led out of captivity and their relationship to God. And then how it just deteriorated and then came to this point. And that's why Jeremiah is considered the weeping prophet, because he's given bad news. he's telling the people, this is what's occurring. This is what's going to happen. And I think that's always a challenge in our life, is when we have things come to us that we don't like. How do we handle it? Do we look and take in the information and think, how can we understand this? What are we going to do in our life? Or are we going to just persist and say, no, that's not true. Get out of my sight. Because Jeremiah was truly a prophet who came to tell the people and help the people through some tough times. As a voice of God, and once again, it tells you all about God. He's not leaving these people destitute. He's helping them understand. Let's get an understanding of why this is occurring. Let's talk about this. Let's look at the dynamic of this. Let's understand this. And then he gives them hope at the end. But it's important to look at how Jeremiah and his process. Ellen White talks about the Reformation under Josiah had cleansed the land of idolatrous shrines, but the hearts of the multitudes had not been transformed. The seeds of truth that had sprung up and given promise of abundant harvest had been choked by thorns. Going back to what you said, you had times when you pushed back and said, no, I'm not sure, God. I don't want this. I'm, you know. But then you kept coming back to, okay, God, I know you love me. I know you're invested. Go ahead.
You know, a story that I can tell. I grew up in Denton, Texas, and went through the public school system. We were one of the only families in Denton that was a Seventh-day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I went to a public school. And in the fourth grade, and we always listened to the voice of prophecy on Sunday morning on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the fourth grade, and I had had to explain to my friends and to teachers why I could not do things on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
my Sabbath, or Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had done a lot of witnessing. Well, one morning, the principal got on the PA system, and he called a special program for all of us to go, all sixth grades, to go to the auditorium. There was going to be a special program. And so we got in there, and here were these four fine-looking men standing there in their suits, and they started singing, of course, a cappella. One of the guys had a pitch pipe. It was the King's Herald Quartet.
Wow.
And they had been riding around the town in a convertible, and I got to see them after, you know, then they were still there right at lunch because the principal asked them to stay for lunch. And so I got to see them. I was never so proud of our people, our, you know, and what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys started singing.
Wow.
And it was, you know, such a beautiful thing, and everybody was just speechless.
Uh-huh. Wow.
It was the biggest experience in my school life. To have that happen.
Look at that, the power of that, to feel like, okay, I'm not different, I'm okay. There's others that are, that you can imagine what that must have been like for you as that 10-year-old, 8-9-year-old. And that experience of feeling like, oh, I got somebody I can identify with. We all need that. That's why it's such a powerful thing to look at what Jeremiah is really trying to help the people understand. He's trying to help them understand God has not left you even though you feel discouraged. Even though these things are going to happen to you, God is there. You felt excited. You felt identity. You felt like, oh, they're part of the church that I go to. That's my people. And that just, look at that impression of how that, those kinds of things bind you. Those kind of things bind you to that experience of being with God. And that's what interconnectedness too. I want to go back to what Brendel said. When you feel known by somebody, you feel connected to them. When you know God, that's why the time Knowing God Ministries. When you know God, there's no question about loving God. The question is, I want to know more. I want to understand fuller. I want to get more understanding. So really, the emphasis is in knowing God. And don't you think Jeremiah and his life experiences became to understand and know God? Here as a youth, he thought, I'm not sure I'm fit for this. I'm not sure this is what I should be doing. I don't speak very well. I don't do this. I don't do this. But boy, what an experience he had. And don't you imagine what it would be like in heaven with Jeremiah? Say, Jeremiah, tell me about it. Oh, let me tell you about it. What will he tell me? He'll talk about what God did for him. He'll talk about God touching his mouth. God speaking through him. And what an honor and privilege that was. Will he talk about the persecution? He might. Will he talk about other things that were hardships? He might. But oh, he comes to understand and know, God, there is nothing to fear. Be not afraid. It's when we don't know God, that's when we have the most fear. That's when we're in the most destitute place. Be not afraid. I think those words are something that we can just keep echoing in our lives, because all of us have things that occur. All of us have events that happen. But God is in charge, and that's the beauty. That's the beauty of all of this. Goes on and talks about the text here. And the word of the Lord came to me saying, "What do you see, Jeremiah?" And I said, "I see a rod of an almond tree." Then the Lord said to me, "You have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it." And the word of the Lord came to me a second time saying, "What do you see?" And I said, "I see a boiling pot facing away from the north." Then the Lord said to me, "Out of the north the evil will break forth on all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I'm calling all the families of kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they will come and they will set each one of his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, against all the walls round them and against all the cities of Judah." The beauty of this, the first two texts, is he says, "What do you see? I see a rod of an almond tree." And in the lesson, it talks about, most Bible translate the Hebrew expression verse 11 as the branch of an almond tree. These translations, however, miss the Hebrew play on words here. The word translated almond tree has the same root as the verb to keep watch, which appears in verse 12 when the Lord says he is going to keep watch over his word to fulfill it. One could argue that the central message of the entire book of Jeremiah is found in verses 11 and 12. God's words will be fulfilled. One day, everyone will see events happen just as God said they would. God wants his people to turn away from their sins. He has offered grace and forgiveness, but he does not force anyone to obey and be healed. If his people will not respond to him, his words of judgment and punishment will certainly be fulfilled, as his words against Israel were fulfilled in the book of Jeremiah. God is in charge, and God will prevail. And I think, to me, that's the beauty of looking at that. This is God's world. We are his people. Our decision is whether we're going to be with him and know him, or whether we're going against him. But to know God is to love him. And to me, that's such a beautiful message to keep reminding ourselves when we see all the turmoil in this world. That's nothing to focus on. It's knowing God and trusting God. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful on this Sabbath day that we can come together and start looking at Jeremiah. And more than looking at Jeremiah, we can see how you continue to love us. You continue to love Jeremiah. You continue to love the children of Israel as they went through their struggles. And you provided them understanding. May we in our own life have the same knowledge of you and the same experience of recognizing you want us to understand more fully what's happening with us. And may we come to the awareness of how much you love us and how great you are as a God. Thank you for this Sabbath day and this class. In your holy name, amen.